Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, a place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 100. And it's draft week. As it's Tuesday, the NFL draft taking place at Jerry World in Arlington. Coming up Thursday night, Round 1. Friday night, Rounds 2 and 3. And the balance of the draft on Saturday, Dave. We're finally here. And as we talked about on last Friday, for a lot of people, you know, this is just almost as fun as playoff game weekend. This is a big time for a lot of fans, and obviously an incredibly important time for each of the 32 teams.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and you know, for us who cover the Steelers, you know, year round and all, we don't get a really good head start on the draft prospects until the season's over. Really, kind of the Senior Bowl is at least for me, and I know Alex too, because he's been going down there for the last several years. That's when we really just start, getting acquainted with several of these names. Now, obviously, you already know the big names from watching college football throughout the year, the Saquon Barkleys and the Sam Darnolds and, you know, all the big names and all like that. But, you know, a lot of the other players, like, to be honest with you, I didn't know much about a guy like Leighton Van Der Esch until, you know, after the Senior Bowl, and of course several of these other guys as well. So, it's fun to look back at the entire process. And I was thinking about this last night while watching, finishing up a little bit more tape on some later round guys as well too. It's funny how much you're able to learn in such a short period of time on a lot of these players. And thank God for YouTube nowadays. And look, there's been for the last couple of years a nice underground of all 22 college tape that allows us to look at that angle too, and hopefully within the next, you know, 2 to 3 years, we're looking at some sort of, you know, game pass for college where you could just go in and watch, you know, any all 22. You would think colleges would be all over this, David, because I got to be honest with you, I would pay.
Maybe you should just be quiet, and we should go sort this out and make some money.
Yeah, well, I'm sure the NCAA would take a large chunk of whatever we had. But, you know, you would think we're not too far off for something like that. And at least, you know, there's all this talk about how college players should, you know, be paid and this, that, and the other. Why not? I mean, the revenue to me is there. Look at how many people subscribe to Game Pass, you know, just NFL with all these draft junkies. I mean, everybody and their brother's a YouTube scout nowadays. How nice would it be to have a subscription service for that? But yeah, it is a culmination of a lot of study and all. And look, as much as we think that we know about how the draft may or may not go, there's always surprises year in and year out.
And let's be very clear about that. Not only do we not know, it's very clear that Mike Tomlin and Kevin Colbert don't know. I mean, you just can't predict, you know, in this case, how 27 teams are going to act in front of you. And it's not even necessarily 27. It could be, you know, some of the teams behind you making trades to move up. I mean, it's fun. I mean, and great credit to Alex for putting together, you know, a 7-round mock with commentary on everything, and even putting undrafted free agents with players. I mean, that's a ton of work. And it gives Alex a great, he has to think about all 32 teams, and he has to think, you know, and look, Dave, you've obviously done it as well, Dave. He has to think about the needs of each team and then think about all the players. So it gives, for a person doing it, it gives you great familiarity with all the stuff. But, I mean, you know, obviously we're throwing darts here, pretty much after the first four picks. And, even tough to get those right these days. So it's very interesting. And you know, as Kevin and Mike talked yesterday and say pretty much the same thing they say every year, it is as inexact a predictive science as things can be. I was watching a show last night on on the one of the, I guess, in the Nat Geo channel, on Nova, about prediction and how we predict weather and how we, if somebody gets lost at sea, how they think about how they're going to look for them and all the probabilities in science and in gambling and everything else. NFL draft, throw it all out the window, man. People have no idea. It's people, you know, taking guesses and trades being made and trying to figure out who fits where and who. Once somebody goes off the board, everything changes as you move downstream.
Boy, is there a more worthless exercise than mock drafts? Yet we all do them. We all read them. I post about probably 70 of them. Maybe not that many, but certainly feels close to that national
media. You know, two a week for 20 weeks at least. Yeah, and you know, it's talking points, and let's talk about it. Look, you know, we've talked about, you know, Kiper and McShay, or like them or don't like them. I don't know why people dislike them. It seems silly, but they're certainly the most high profile guys. Kiper, because he's been around the longest, and he's ESPN's got such a big reach, but. You know, again, a guy like McShay in his mock that came out a couple days ago, 3-round mock, put in a corner with the Steelers in the first round. And Dave and I talked about it Friday. And if I think about the positions of need, Dave, corners last on the defense. And, you know, I can make an argument that it's behind almost every other position on the team. I mean, sure, you know, I don't see him taking a quarterback or an offensive lineman. But, you know, outside of that, as we talked about, you've got all six guys back from last year's roster. You've got a first-round pick. You've got a former Pro Bowl player in Joe Hayden. You've got Mike Hilton, who was arguably the best defensive player on the Steelers last year. And you've got a third round pick from last year just to start with, and then you got the developmental guy in Allen, and you've got Cody Sensabaugh. So you know, taking a corner in the first round seems to make no sense. And you would think a guy like McShay, who spends his entire life, that's his entire life's job, would have a better sense of that. Now watch, they'll take a corner in the first round. I'll look like the idiot, but yeah, you know, it's interesting.
You know, the great Peter King also has Jair Alexander going to the Steelers at 28 overall. Look, if there was, I mean, I will say this. I'll be just as shocked as you will be if they do draft a cornerback in the first round. But if you were going to mock one cornerback to the Steelers in the first round, it's Alexander, because of the fact that, you know, he's an underclassman. He checks a lot of boxes with the P-Spark score. And, oh, yeah, the Steelers went to the Louisville Pro Day, both Kevin Colbert and Mike Tomlins. But you are talking about a guy in Alexander that missed, what did he miss, 5 or 6 games last year with a knee injury. Now, obviously, you look at his what he put together in measurables in the underwear Olympics and all, that knee is absolutely fine. But, you know, essentially you're talking really about, you know, a 1.5-year starter, if you will, with him. And, you know, the Steelers, you would think there would be, in fact, he I'm looking at it right now, he played in 31 games at Louisville, and he started 19 of them. Last year, he played in 6 and started just 5. And now, obviously, his big year was 2016. He had 5 interceptions that year, 14 passes defensed, and 39 total tackles. So, really, if you're going off of any of Alexander's tape, it's probably from 2 years ago and not last year. And if you look back at the Steelers' first-round draft picks, and I think I wrote about this at some point during the pre-draft process, you know, the Steelers don't have a history of drafting guys in the first round that miss games in 2017. That's why it kind of makes you wonder, you know, about guys like Jesse Bates missed back-to-back games in last year, even though it's just a minor knee injury that he's obviously overcome by now. Rashawn Evans with that groin missed a couple of games, you know. So it would be, you know, look, we talk about, it seems like we're talking about a lot of first for the Steelers when it comes to Kevin Colbert drafts. Over the last few years, it would be a first, I think, this year if they were to draft a guy that missed a couple of games or more last season there. So it's just something else to look forward for during this draft. And like I said, I'll be shocked if it's a cornerback. But if it is a cornerback, it better be Alexander.
Okay, fair enough on that. And, you know, again, we let's get into more specifically anything that stood out between what Kevin and Macy just said.
Real quick, it was Hughes that
Hughes was McShay's pick.
McShay, and boy, that, you know, you want a reason for. I mean, you really want to be able to poke holes in that one. Just a 1 year starter at Central Florida. He was a kid that originally was at North Carolina. Had the off the field indiscretion, and then ended up getting suspended, leaving school. Went to a community college in 2016, and then over at UCF, for one season last year. So, like I said, I mean, easy to poke holes in that one. And if you were going to draft a cornerback, it would not be Hughes, in my opinion. It would be Alexander. Carry on.
Right, and obviously, guys got to be there to draft him. And a lot of what we talk about here is, you know, guy, you know, a lot of guys are going to be off the board. We've obviously seen scenarios where a guy like David DeCastro, who we assumed would be taken in the 5 to 10 picks before the Steelers, was there for him. So, you know, again, it's a guessing game on what other teams do, who moves up. Certainly the story of this draft will undoubtedly be, you know, where these six quarterbacks go. And I think everybody expects four to go in the, you know, probably in the top 12, maybe at the latest, with Buffalo picking 12th. I wouldn't think any chance that it gets past 15 with Arizona at 15. And again, this is not assuming any trades. And then do the other two guys go in the first round? And I think there's no question Lamar Jackson's going to go in the first round, maybe higher. And I think at that point, if five guys go, there's going to be a little bit of itchy trigger finger for somebody to go up and get Mason Rudolph. So, you know, I think I'm a little different than the consensus, but I expect all six of these guys to go in the first round. And that certainly will be the driver. And if what Kevin said yesterday, I don't expect him to say anything differently. I don't read anything into it, but he said they hadn't ruled out any position, including quarterback, with their first round pick.
Yeah, and, you know, look, he has done a great job this offseason of leading one to possibly believe that quarterback could be in play. I mean, you and I, we have, you know, there's no sense you and I spending a lot of talk on this. You obviously don't think it's going to happen. When it came down to my final mock, which we'll talk about later on in the show, I obviously don't have confidence that's going to happen. However, if it does happen, I'm not going to be shocked. And if it does happen, it would be, in my opinion, Mason Rudolph and not Lamar Jackson. I think five are going to go before the Steelers pick, at least. Okay, is Lamar Jackson going to be number five? Is Mason Rudolph going to be number five? You know, I obviously don't know, but I think five are going to come off the board, and then it gets into the situation. If Mason Rudolph is on the board, look, I mean, we'll know real quick. And I've got to be honest with you, David. And you know, I like Mason Rudolph's tape. I got to admit, I like his tape. And maybe I'm a little biased because of the Ben Roethlisberger years and how Rudolph sort of compares to a guy like Ben Roethlisberger. I could see that being the guy, and I would not have issue with him being the guy from the sheer fact that when I go top and bottom of these guy of the guys that I think that the Steelers might have interest in being their first round selection, I don't get overly excited about it. I mean, obviously, I don't think Roquan Smith's going to be there. I don't think Edmonds out of Virginia Tech's going to be there. But when you get into the Leighton Vander Esch, when you get into the Rashawn Evans, when you get into the Ronnie Harrison, when you get into the, let's put Justin Reed in there, even when you get into, say, a guy maybe like Jesse Bates, Jair Alexander, the usual suspects that you've probably seen associated with the Steelers over the course of the last several months, I don't find myself, you know, getting overly excited about it. And because of that, I would be, I think, okay if the Steelers did draft a guy like Mason Rudolph. Now, did Mason Rudolph, you know, people are hot or cold, and people think he's a third-round guy, okay? But we've seen third-round quarterbacks go in the first round before, right? You know, so that's where I am on this. No, I don't think it's going to happen. But, oh, Lord, are we going to have some fun if it does happen?
Absolutely. It would be crazy. And I'll tell you just my thought on this is that the wild card in all of this isn't Baker Mayfield. The wild card's Lamar Jackson. And I think some team is going to go – and look, I'm not giving you anybody an opinion on Lamar Jackson. He's a great athlete. I think Lamar Jackson has big-time potential. Obviously, he's not a big guy yet, yet in terms of filling out, but he's 6'3". He's incredibly athletic. He's got a big arm. You know, accuracy is an issue, all, you know, blah, blah, blah. Everybody knows all the details on these guys. I don't need to tell them. I think Lamar Jackson is going to be gone by 15. That's my off-the-wall whatever prediction is. Look, people are, you know, maybe somebody loves Josh Rosen, Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, all these guys. They, you know, everybody in the draft has their mostly pros in the first round and flaws, and everybody's trying to find their flaws and pick these guys apart. I think Lamar Jackson, and you know, the old expression, it only takes one. Somebody out there loves Lamar Jackson, and they're not going to, you know, if he's sitting there at 15, he's going to be gone, or somebody's going to take him before that. I really think that. I think there's massive upside with the guy. It doesn't mean he's going to fulfill that potential, but he's such a good athlete. You know, the question of how he handled his pre-draft situation with his mom and the whiteboard stuff and maybe the Wonderlic test, I mean, that all plays into it. None of that necessarily is going to be a positive for him in this. But his athleticism, playing in a pro-style offense, coming out of Louisville, what he's learned along the way and the success he's had, and then, you know, the productivity – and not for nothing, it counts for something. I think he's going to be off the board, and that's why I think, you know, if five guys go in the top 15, that's going to drive that Mason Rudolph stuff. People saying, you know what, we need to get, you know, we kind of like this guy anyway. We just can't afford to let this one go by, because after this, the drop off to the kid from Richmond and anybody else is too big. So the position's big. It always seems to run. I think we're going to see a run, and Jackson's going to go, and that's going to cause Rudolph to go. And you know, I wouldn't be at all surprised if they're all gone by, you know, well before the Steelers pick.
You know, and I referenced this on a previous podcast with you talking about the quarterbacks, and back several years ago when Bill Parcells was part of kind of doing some stuff, I think, for ESPN. I think at the time he was in the front office of the Dolphins, and talking about the seven key things that go into, you know, evaluating off the field, you know, the kind of the seven checklist, if you when it comes to evaluating quarterbacks and all. And I have found that broadcast. I'm still in the underground, and I'm trying to get that, because a lot has been written about what Parcells said during that particular interview, and I want to see it for myself, you know, and listen to it for myself. That's why I'm trying to download it. That's why I haven't really written anything about it other than kind of referencing it. But you know, Mason Rudolph, according to what's out there that Parcells said, Mason Rudolph checked all seven boxes there. And I think he's the only quarterback in this year's draft that did that. Now, look, Bill Parcells has missed on quarterbacks, right? Himself and I wasn't even Pat White one of them, and I'm trying to remember going back through the Parcells years of maybe another one. Didn't he have one in Dallas that he missed on there?
The kid from Quincy Carter, was he? It was probably Quincy Carter must have been after Parcells. I don't remember.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. What about Henson? Was Henson?
Drew Henson. Yeah, you know, I won't be able to put the coach and GM with the year. So I won't get that right. But Drew Henson and Quincy Carter were both in Dallas.
Let's see. Henson was actually drafted by the Texans in the sixth round, and he was in Dallas in 2004. there. So maybe it's not him. I would have to kind of pull up the quarterback. But it seems like there was another one I saw referenced in an article that Parcells had missed there, that maybe he had checked a lot of those boxes. So, I mean, it's obviously not foolproof. I mean, if there was a foolproof check this box, then it would make things a lot easier. But when it comes to Mason Rudolph, I think he's one of the quarterbacks out of this. Well, let me ask you this. Is this the best quarterback class?
No, because I don't think
since 2004.
I don't think so. I mean, certainly you can't certainly look until I'll just go back to Wentz and Goff. I mean, it doesn't matter who else is in the class. We've got maybe in terms of quantity, guys up front, maybe it is, but you know, you've seen two guys prove that they can play in the league, and that's a huge deal. So I can't – look, I think it's a fair question to say going into the draft, is it? Maybe going into the draft. I'd be hesitant to even say that. I mean, you know, any of these drafts where you had clear-cut top two guys, I don't know that we have – clear-cut top two guys. It's just, you know, quarterbacks, people are so desperate for quarterbacks. I mean, I think if some of these teams, obviously they're poor because they don't have a quarterback, so it's a little bit of a catch-22 with this whole conversation. But nobody's putting – I mean, I think the consensus is Saquon Barkley and Bradley Chubb are the two best players in the draft, whereas I do think in some of these past drafts the quarterbacks were seen as being the best players in the draft.
And some of these are obviously going to wash out. I mean, but two, three, four of these quarterbacks are just they're going to be just guys, right?
For sure. I mean, not all six of them are going to be, you know, top 10 quarterbacks. No chance.
Right. Now here is we're 22 minutes into this podcast, and we've talked about a position the Steelers are probably unlikely to draft in quarterback here. But, I mean, it is the central focal point, I think, of this year's draft, so it's worth hitting on. Let me kind of segue us this way. I was on the podcast with Paul and Dave T yesterday. Do you want to talk about an experience? That was I already posted a link to that on my Twitter feed for those that want to go listen to it. It was definitely an honor to be on with those guys, and we definitely had a good time. But I was asked a very interesting question at the end by Dave T, and I'm going to ask this one to you. And I sort of asked Dave this question when we had him on, but I didn't phrase it right, and he did when he gave it back to me, and I'm going to ask you. All right. David Todd, you have an expansion franchise, and you are the general manager this year, okay? You have the number one pick in the draft. How are you – where are you going with the pick?
I'm trading out. If it's a true expansion franchise, I know I'm – look, I'm not going to be the Las Vegas Knights. I'm trying to put together a roster – my quarterback's going to get killed. So a rookie quarterback, I don't necessarily want that to be the guy. I want to sign a Josh McCown. I want to get players. I want to build both lines. I'm not even sure Saquon Barkley would be all that important to me. I'm going to take Chubb. I'm going to get Nelson from Notre Dame. I'm going to try, you know, I'm going to move out of one, and I'm going to get, you know, the fourth pick and another first round pick. And I'm going to try to build on both lines.
All right, let's say you can't trade out.
Okay. Then if I can't trade out, I'd probably go Chubb because I just can't take an offensive guard as the first overall pick. I just can't do it, and I don't know that any of the tackles are good enough. Unless somehow in the expansion draft I had gotten an offensive line that made me comfortable with a bunch of veterans – that's probably the only way I'd take a quarterback. Now, if for some reason, you know, if you felt like you could be competitive in the second year, and you can do enough in the rest of the draft and whatever to build lines, I guess you could pick a guy and have him sit behind a quarterback. I would pick Sam Darnold would be my guy if I were picking a quarterback. But I'd still probably lean toward Chubb and having a having a, you know, a vicious edge rusher.
What do you reckon my answer was to that?
I would guess it was kind of similar to mine, but I don't, obviously it wasn't.
I told him, I said, look, I don't think I mentioned trading out. I thought that they just wanted, because he asked me to name one player. I said, and I prefaced this by saying what I said about the kid all throughout prior to January, that I thought he should stay in school one more year. But I told him, I said, I think I would draft Sam Darnold, but I would not throw him to the Wolves the way the Houston Texans did with Carr all those many years ago. I would get a veteran to come in and be the day one quarterback, and then I would draft Sam Darnold with the hope that I could get him on the field and be my guy by the second year. That's how I answered that question.
So very similarly.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So interesting. I mean, I think Barkley is a great talent. I think Chubb's a great talent. And you know, Bill Parcells said many years ago, you top of the draft like that, you either get a quarterback, you get a guy to protect the quarterback, i.e. a left tackle, you get a guy that can get after the quarterback, you know, that can put the quarterback on the ground. So I think it'd be one of those three things: a pass rusher, a star left tackle, such as maybe a Joe Thomas if one was available, or a quarterback that I think could be the franchise starting in the second year. So I went with Sam Darnold on that.
Okay. So anything else from Kevin and Mike that caught your attention?
Let me
ask you this. So I posted that on this cornerback thing when McShay said, I said, you know, it might be the least, there's a little bit of hyperbole, as you like to say, in saying it might be the least likely position that the Steelers pick. It might surprise me more than any other position. You know, the honest answer is it actually might. I mean, quarterback, look, I'm not in favor. I don't think they'll do it. I think it would be a bad tactical decision. I don't know that I guess that would, it would still surprise me. But the position that would surprise me the most, I mean, would offensive line surprise you the most? I mean, wide receiver's not going to – I mean, nobody thinks they're taking a wide receiver. That's not going to surprise me. Tight end's not going to surprise me. No other position on the defense is going to surprise me. So running back isn't going to surprise many people. So it comes down to offensive line, cornerback, and cornerback, right? I mean, that's it, right?
Well, you know, you can make an argument, I guess, for a guard if one was there. You know, like the kid out of – which he's not, the kid out of Notre Dame. That guy's a beast. But if he was – you could make an argument maybe for a guard for the sheer fact that Ramon Foster is in his final year, and if you're not sold on a former undrafted free agent in B.J. Finney being your future left guard, if you're wanting more pedigree there, then I could listen to an argument for a guard, okay? The tackle position,
there
aren't any.
I mean, if somebody fell, I mean, you know, are you sold that Ali Villanueva is the guy? Certainly his play last year doesn't close the book on, you know, saying he's the guy, you know, for the next 5 years.
I mean, he's not awful. I mean.
No, right. I'm just saying if you were enamored of somebody, you know, I guess you could do it, but. Would that surprise you? Would that surprise you less?
I would be less surprised by a guard than I would a tackle because of Ramon Foster. I mean, look, they got Villanueva up under contract. They're just not going to give money to him just because they are. I think Villanueva is still developing. Now, is he going to be Joe Thomas? No. But can you win a Super Bowl with Ali Villanueva at left tackle and Marcus Gilbert at right tackle? Absolutely you can. The jury's still out on what the Hawkins is. So, you know, you can't really, you know, for us to talk about him really is unfair because you just don't have the tape on him. Which he's a tight end as far as we're concerned right now, the way he's been used for the most part there. Hubbard's obviously gone, but you know they have the other guy there that you know they had on the active roster last year as well. I would be shocked if you, and look, I mean, do you really want Orlando Brown, the kid out of Oklahoma in the first round, based on the measurables that he's put up this offseason? There just isn't anybody there, in my opinion. So that would make it even more surprising if it was a tackle. But you could maybe make an argument for one of these guards.
Okay, so rank the bottom three positions that would surprise you the most. Of the offensive line, cornerback, quarterback.
I would be – tackle's got to be down there, man. I would – from least surprising to most surprising of those three, I would go quarterback, cornerback, tackle.
Okay. All right. We have covered this. You know, this is our last. We're in the death throes of our draft coverage here as we go down the home stretch. We have covered this. I think as much as we can cover it. I threw out a name. You know, let's just throw out a couple names and more or less be done with it. A guy who, if he fell to the second round, would Cortland Sutton. Enthrall you at, you know, pick whatever it is, you know, 60 where the Steelers pick in the second round? Is he a guy who could possibly fall that far? And would you have any interest in him in the first round?
Probably not in – well, look, I mean, if he fell to the second, then I'd start wondering why is he still on the board at that point, because he is a guy you would think would go – somewhere in the top 40 picks, I think. You know, he's 20. He's going to be, I think, 23 fairly soon as well, too. So that's kind of another. I guess if there was a
small negative, yeah.
A small negative. When's his birthday? He will be 23 in October. Okay, so I mean, are you going to spend? I mean, the odds of maybe getting him to a second contract probably aren't great, right? I mean. He did have some nice production over the course of the final 3 years, some consistent production. Look, I'd have no issue with him in the second round if he fell there, okay? Do I think he's in play in the first round? Man, they are going to need a big receiver next year.
Who would you – if Cortland Sutton and Mike Gesicki are on the board in the second round, who would you rather have?
I think I'd take Gesicki there.
Interesting.
Because I think you could get him on the field in year one in certain instances, spread or whatnot, and then kind of he could kind of be your X factor guy. And look, I mean, second round, that's perfect round to get someone with those measurables that flex tight end, if you will. So yeah, I think I'd take Gesicki even over Sutton should he fall there.
All right. Well, I don't have any more hypotheticals or games that we play. You want to talk about who you had him taken in your mock?
Let's quickly go over what Kevin Colbert did say. I mean, yeah, there was nothing earth shattering. I mean, for starters, we haven't even talked about them picking up the fifth year option on Bud Dupree, and yes, that was likely to happen all along. But I think there was enough. Or there hasn't been enough there with Dupree in his first 3 years to at least give some pause to have the conversation as to why maybe they shouldn't pick that up. Now, they obviously did it. They don't just do that just to do it. As far as it being a no-brainer situation, here's the one thing that's aggravating me about the talk about Bud Dupree right now, and I don't know 100% whether it should, but I've seen it written by a few media guys that, oh, well, they can just rescind the fifth-year option if things don't work out. And that gives you the idea that in rescinding that, that the player will be able to leave as a unrestricted free agent next offseason, and that it will play into the compensatory formula. I don't think that's right. I think a lot of this goes back to what Armando, what's his name, writes for Miami Herald.
Segunda.
Yeah, you know.
Segunda. Yeah, I know who
he means. He last year, I think, was writing about Juwan James and how the Dolphins were going to rescind the fifth-year option and all like that. Well, look, A, that didn't happen. B, James is still on the Dolphins roster. You know, he spent, I think, last year on IR. I reached out to our buddy Joel Corey, and I said, man, this fifth-year option cannot be rescinded, right? A player must be cut prior to the start of the new league year. And he wrote back to me, he says, there isn't anything in the CBA about rescinding the option after it's been exercised. And I made sure to point out, you know, and he pointed this out to me. Look, we saw the Detroit Lions were the most recent team that they gave the fifth-year option to Eric Ebron only to cut him. This year, right after failing to trade him, we have seen a couple of fifth-year option players given that option only to be cut. If anybody listening can come up with an example of me since this new CBA and the fifth-year option came into effect, where a player has had the fifth-year option rescinded, and the player just ultimately allowed to walk as a free agent and not cut, let me know. That's one of my biggest gripes I have, because I don't think rescinding the option, the fifth-year option, but right before the start of the, you know, through the deadline of the new league year when the contract becomes fully guaranteed, I don't think that's an option. I think you have to cut the player in order to do that. Now, the rest of it that comes with the fifth-year option on Bud Dupree, we've known the amount's going to be over $9 million, yada, yada. You don't just give him this fifth-year option with the idea that, well, you know, he might not make it. We might have to cut him, you know, next offseason. You're giving it with him under the idea that he's going to play in 2019 under the fifth-year option. And, look, if there was a make-or-break year for a player on the Steelers in 2018, it's Bud Dupree, because I got to be quite honest with you, David. You know, he is the same player he was in college as of right now. Now, he has been banged up. He missed half of his second season with the core muscle injury. There was some talk last year that he battled a shoulder injury early season, and that affected his play. If you look at his career, 14 and a half sacks, they haven't been what you know, a lot of them haven't been high-quality sacks. This guy needs to pick it up in 2018.
Well, no doubt. I don't think Bud Dupree's, you know, certainly not been a bust. I thought the second half of his second year, you know, when he came back from IR, I thought we saw what we were hoping for from Bud Dupree, and I expected big step forward. This year we didn't see the big step forward. So yeah, I'm with you. Look, I, again, this is a no-brainer. He's your first-round pick. He's still an incredibly athletic guy. He's learning the game still a bit. And, you know, look, he's been around long enough that he's got to – look, if this defense is going to take a step forward, Cam Hayward has to be good every game. Stephon Tuitt has to be better every game than he was this past year. Bud Dupree and T.J. Watt have got to be, you know, double-digit effective get-to-the-quarterback guys. I mean, look, we talk about him dropping in coverage and the different things it allows the Steelers to do, and all that's true. But you got to be able to get to the quarterback. And the Steelers, the thing that's unusual is, you know, we saw the quarterback sack numbers the Steelers put up last year, but we still didn't feel like the defense was all that good. And it was better the first half of the year than it was the second half. And certainly the injuries to Hayden and Shazier play a part, but it goes to what you said about having important and impactful quarterback sacks and getting to, and it's not just sacks, it's hurries and hits and everything else, getting to the quarterback quickly, because they gave up too many big plays and they got to do better things. And Bud Dupree is going to be a massively big part of that.
And here's the thing too. It sure doesn't look like they paid attention to any edge rushers during this pre-draft process, right? And regardless of them picking up, I would feel a lot better, David, you know, even after picking up the fifth-year option on Bud Dupree, if they were to draft an edge rusher in the first three rounds this year. But now, you know, what are the odds now of the Steelers getting an edge rusher, an outside linebacker in the first three picks now?
Well, I mean, one of the things that was interesting is the Steelers only brought in 23 guys out of 30 visits. You would think.
I got a beef with that as well, too, but I'll save that. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, so what's interesting with that is you have a free look at seven more guys. Why wouldn't you take it? It seems a bit odd. Now, you got to see a ton of guys at the combine. So, first of all, I hate when people say the Steelers are showing interest in guys. You know, they've shown great interest in a guy. And this, you know, this swirled around Baker Mayfield a little, Mason Rudolph a little bit, and some other guys as well. It's, look, the Steelers are showing a great interest in 150 guys. For anybody to try to ascertain that they're more interested in this guy than that guy, that's just asinine. Look, they have dinner with guys. They go to the pro days. They go to the Senior Bowl. They go to the combine. They bring guys in. They've canvassed. This is their job. So when people say teams are showing, it's not just, you know, this is not just a Steeler thing. This is across the NFL. This is what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to show interest in 200 guys and try to figure out which ones fit and which ones you want to have. So, you know, that whole, I don't know where I was going with this, but I wanted to get that rant out there before the draft comes around.
All right. Well, but David, my wife has never looked at me the way Mike Tomlin was looking at Mason Rudolph.
See, that's the kind of thing that drives me insane.
I'm just throwing.
I know. You push my button.
God, just pushing your buttons there.
And I know. It's good.
And I know that it pushes a lot of people's buttons, because I made sure as soon as I saw that picture, I knew I was going to run with that. And, David, you better hope to God they don't draft Mason Rudolph, because I am going to be – you're not going to want to do podcasts with me for the rest of the summer, I don't think. No, nobody's going to want to listen to me for the rest of the summer there. But, okay, now back to the outside line. Yeah, look, I mean, the pre-draft visit list is fun to look at, right? The playing where's Tomlin and where's Colbert is fun to do during March and April there. I think you can read a lot into it as far as maybe first-round draft picks and all go like that. Now, does this absolutely mean that the Steelers are not going to draft an outside linebacker this year? Boy, let's hope. I hope they do. I don't think it'll be in the first three rounds, though. I think we could see it maybe in round five or round seven. And I'll put it to you this way: I think it'll be a mistake if they don't draft one. And I hope they don't regret. Put it to you this way: they got a lot of eggs in the baskets right now with Bud Dupree, right?
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, what do you think of Anthony Chiccolo, David?
Well, I corrected Jeremy Fowler's tweet when he said, you know, he said Chiccolo signed his restricted tender. He's an important – I'm going to remember exactly how he phrased it. Important rotational outside rusher, you know, a rotational edge rusher for the Steelers. And I was like, whoa, let's dial that back. And I went and checked the numbers. And Chiccolo played 27% of the defensive snaps last year. He's an important special teams player. He played 71% of the special team snaps. But remember, he played 27 of the defensive snaps last year because Bud Dupree missed week one and T.J. Watt missed week three. So 64 of that 27% was in the first 3 weeks. So after that, I'm doing all this on memory. I think there was one game where he played more than 11 snaps, and it was the last game of the season against Cleveland, I guess, when obviously it didn't matter. So Anthony Chiccolo is just a guy. I mean, I've said it from day one. The Steelers cut Anthony Chiccolo the year he was drafted, and he and the kid from Ohio State, they cut the fourth-round pick, and they cut Chiccolo the sixth-round pick. The guys made it through waivers. They brought him back. Eventually, you know, he's on the roster. He's been a good special teams player. Not knocking him in that respect at all. But, you know, he's Arthur Motes. You know, he's you know, he's an energy guy and he's fine, but he is not a rotational edge rusher.
And it's hard to think that the organization, look, we don't know what Keon Adams is. I mean, right? I mean, none of us know. The guy hurt his shoulder. We didn't get to see Keon Adams last year. But it's hard to think that the Steelers have and look, I mean, Keon Adams could be the next, you know, whatever, you know, as far as we know. We don't know. But it's hard to think that the Steelers have enough information right now on Keon Adams to think, okay, well, he's going to be he's going to push Anthony Ciccolo for the number three. You see, Ron,
maybe he can be Anthony Ciccolo on the other side. I mean, you know, maybe he can be Arthur Motes. That's got to be that's a good case scenario, really.
Yeah, I want a little bit more than Arthur Motes, to be quite honest with you. But you see where I'm going here. I'm worried about this outside linebacker position. This is now how many seasons going on now? Where, and look, we think,
everyone.
You know, we think T.J. Watt.
Since they cut Lamar Woodley?
Yeah, we think T.J. Watt's going to be okay. I mean, definitely you would think that there's going to be improvement over his rookie season. I'm fine with that pick last year because it needed to be made, okay? But, man, I hope they don't regret, you know, not investing, if it ultimately happens, not investing in a edge rusher, you know, maybe in the first three rounds of this draft. No, and I'll definitely be mad if they don't address it in round five or seven just to get another body, you know, in there. So, you know, that's one thing that to come out the Bud Dupree thing with the fifth year option. You hit on another thing on these pre-draft visits. Why in Lord's name would you not use up all of your pre-draft visits? And look, who cares about this year's draft, okay? We've seen the Steelers in the past go after free agents that have come in for pre-draft visits, right? You know, after the first 4 years. To me, I cannot understand the reasoning of why you would not use all of your 30 visits.
I'm with you. I don't really get it. Now, having said that, I did say that they, you know, they probably met with 200 guys, and they feel like the gamesmanship is they didn't want to tip their hand on more guys, and a lot of the guys are late round picks, and they didn't want to bring in, you know, Rashawn Evans or whatever,
and I'm fine with that. Bring in some guys that you think you might have interest in 4 years.
In round five, six, and seven. Yeah, I agree. I'm with you. I don't get it.
Or 4 years from now, you know, maybe you have a question about, you know, this guy and something that happened with him, you know, during the pre-draft process or something he wrote on Twitter or whatnot. Get him in front of you and get him to answer the question. You know, surely you can come up with a reason to bring in whatever, seven more guys or whatnot. So that threw me for a little bit for a loop there. And I think the other thing that maybe threw a lot of people for a loop was Mike Tomlin being asked about Morgan Burnett and saying, where he's going to where he's most likely to open up OTAs at, and he says, free safety. That really, you know, caught me by surprise. Now, I'm going to preface all this by saying I notated everything, you know, Tomlin and Colbert said yesterday, especially Tomlin about Burnett. I'm not taking any of that to the bank just yet. I want to see what's going to happen. But this is what Tomlin said about free safety. He says, I'd imagine it's going to be Burnett, but we hadn't decided yet. He's played a lot of ball. He's started more than most. But again, it's not about how we start. Everybody will be given an opportunity to show where they're capable of contributing. Maybe Morgan ends up at strong safety, Sean Davis set free. So really, even though he said that we might see Morgan at you know, free safety to start things off, you know, none of that should be written down in pen whatsoever. But it did catch me by a little bit by surprise there. Kevin Colbert, the annual, he might trade up, he might trade down. Yeah, breaking news there. He has a new take every year on best player available best player available meets needs and all like that. It's really the same answer every year, just kind of repackaged differently, right?
Yep. Yep. No doubt.
So nothing else there. All right. Let's quickly go over my final mock draft, David. I said earlier in the show, I find myself struggling with getting excited about, you know, possibly any one player. You know, obviously I'd be excited if a guy like Roquan Smith fell down there. And somebody asked me on Twitter, if there's one player the Steelers were to trade up for this year in the first round, who would it be? And I think it would be Roquan Smith. I think after doing all the math and the pre-draft visits and the Steelers' history and reading the manual 8 rules the Steelers must follow before drafting a player in the first round that Alex and I are putting together, I think Justin Reed might be your guy out of Stanford. He checks a lot of boxes. One of the major boxes that he does not check was having Tomlin and Colbert at his pro day, but the Ohio State Pro Day happened that same day, and they're never going to miss Ohio State Pro Day. They did bring Justin Reed in for a visit. The other possible choices, I think, are the kind of the obvious ones out there that I consider. Leighton Vander Esch, man, I can't. Maybe I watched too much of that Virginia game. I don't know. If you came from outer space, David, and I gave you and you were an outer space scout from Mars. And I told you, and I put on the Virginia tape of Leighton Vander Esch, you'd probably tell me you're not going to draft Leighton Vander Esch in the first round. Maybe there's too much bias there for me, and I'm guilty of anybody of overanalyzing some things in the past, especially when it comes to draft choices. Rashawn Evans, there's a whole neck thing floating around about Leighton Vander Esch as well, too, and I don't even know, I'm not a doctor, I'm not even going to comment on that. Rashawn Evans, man, I can't. You know, I'm a groin expert, David. I worry about that groin. I worry about his measurables. You know, the tape says one thing for sure, but boy, those measurables in that groin really have me bothered, as does the fact that he's a one-year starter. The other people that I consider, Darius Geis and Mason Rudolph. Round two, assuming the Steelers don't get an inside linebacker in round one. They have shown interest in Malik Jefferson out of Texas. I think he is their kind of player. Some nice measurables, over 130 P-Spark score. Him or, the Jerome Baker out of Ohio State, a real athletic kid, maybe not an every down linebacker just yet. I could see them going after a Power 5 conference inside linebacker in round two or three if they don't get one in the first. Some other guys that I considered in that round, Christian Kirk, the wide receiver out of Texas A&M. Lorenzo Carter, a very athletic edge out of Georgia that many people think Mike could move to the inside. Josh Sweat, an edge rusher out of Florida State. And Obanya Okoronkwo out of Oklahoma State, a guy that can really get after the quarterback. Flying through the rest of this, I don't know how much tape you've watched on DJ Chark out of LSU. Now, a lot of people think that he is
zero.
A lot of people think he's a kid that's going to go in the first, in the second round. But he only had 66 career receptions over the course of the last 2 years at LSU. That's not a lot. That's not a lot of tape to watch on him when it comes to that to make him a first or second round pick. Now, if you read up on his character and you watch his tape, you will understand why I think the Steelers would have interest in him. Go research this guy before the weekend, not only on the field but off the field. He looks like a Steelers wide receiver. Got some height, weight, and speed to him. Would be a great guy to take over for Martavis Bryant. I understand why people are saying he won't be there in the third round. But if he is, look out. Nwosu out of USC, an edge rusher. Darius Leonard, inside linebacker out of South Carolina State. And James Washington, a wide receiver out of Oklahoma State, another guy I consider there. Round five and on, these are all names that, most of them are guys that the Steelers have shown interest in. Bilal Nichols, the defensive tackle out of Delaware. Boy, you want to talk about a wingspan on this guy. He moved to nose tackle last year as part of the switch from Delaware, going from a 4-3 to a 3-4. He's got his issues. He's going to need some development, learning not how to stand up right off the snap. But he put some decent things on tape, and if the Steelers are indeed looking for a nose tackle to replace Daniel McCullers out of town once and for all, it's him. He also played in both the Senior Bowl and the East-West Shrine Game, and we know how the Steelers like those all-star game guys late in the draft. David, the Steelers have a love for these undersized cornerbacks, and I know it drives our listeners mad, but they like him. And if you want one that checks a lot of boxes, and I know about this guy, Avante Maddox Pittsburgh.
He's had a nice 3 months for not playing a down of football in terms of his stock rising.
Yeah, I mean, if anybody's won, it's him, right? From the combine on, he is a winner. Undersized kid for sure. I think 5'9" and an 8. You probably watched more complete Pitt games than I have, David. He's a physical little. I mean, he's an ankle biter, isn't he? I mean,
yeah. I'll give Avante Maddox credit for getting better over the course. I mean, you know how bad Pitt's secondary was 2 years ago, and I put most of this on the coaching staff and putting these guys in bad positions because they were just getting torched one on one all day long. And Maddox came back, and he was dinged up a bit. And he played well at the end of the season, and he certainly impressed people. Where was it? The Senior Bowl, and since then. So yeah, good for him. But yeah, size is an issue.
Yeah, I think he was an East-West Shrine Game guy. Let me ask you, and we talked about cornerback early in this show. If they drafted a cornerback this year, wouldn't you want another slot guy? Right.
Well, I think so, but I mean, I don't. I really can't. Somebody's got to tell me. We got to know more about Cam Sutton, because can Cam Sutton be that guy? What's the long term view of Cam Sutton? Is this Joe Hayden's last year as a Steeler, and Cam Sutton's going to be the guy who steps in on the outside? So I that's a great question. I wonder what their vision is, because look, when we talked going into camp last year, Cam Sutton was going to get reps on the inside.
And I think it is a great question, and I don't think either one of us can answer it right now. Maybe we'll be able to answer it more after the draft, depending on what kind of guy, if any, cornerback that they draft. I think, judging by what they've looked at this offseason as far as draft visits go and guys they seemingly have paid attention to, you would think a slot cornerback. So if they do draft a cornerback in this draft, I think it would be a slot cornerback. And I think either Maddox or the kid out of Penn State, the undersized kid out of Penn State who I had in my last mock draft, I think those are two excellent choices for late in the draft there. Okay, round seven, being as how the Steelers don't have a six-round draft pick. I came across this kid's tape this last week. Joe Osman out of Central Michigan. He is not going to win any athletic awards, Peace Spark awards, or any of that. But you want to know a fun guy to watch on tape. Is Joe Osman out of Central Michigan. Boy, he put up some good tackle for loss numbers and sacks, 28. He finished second in the school history in career tackles for loss and sacks with 28. He has a nice little spin move. He was at the East-West Shrine Game, and you can see his practice footage on YouTube. You want to talk about impeccable character? You want to talk about a guy that's got a chip on his shoulder for not being invited to the combine and all like that? Well, once again, all he does is get after the quarterback. He's not going to win any underwear Olympic awards. So in the seventh round, if you want a guy that can maybe make the roster as a deep outside linebacker guy, a guy that can help you on special teams, he is a guy. There is another guy, an inside linebacker, that if the Steelers took two of them this year, that Jason Kabinda out of Penn State, I think would be a strong candidate. Some other guys in this round, Javon Roland Jones is a edge out of, I think, Arkansas State. Greg Gilmore, the defensive tackle that they brought in out of LSU, could be an option there as well. And boy, I closed out my draft with a guy that I didn't know anything about until they brought him in. for a pre-draft visit. Carry over from my last mock draft, Russell Gage out of LSU, that wide receiver. David, you know, and I think you're the same way. You love wide receivers that are willing to do the dirty work and that'll block and
absolutely
everything that goes along with that. Russell Gage, a very raw receiver. I think he's got a lot of upside, some development as a route runner. You know, he played at LSU, a prime, you know, Power Five conference team. This guy will help you in special teams, gunner, wherever you need him. And he kind of reminds you, I couldn't help but think of a young Hines Ward when I watched him. I know that that's quite high, you know, hyperbole for a guy that might, you know, look, let's face it, Russell Gage might go undrafted. But if you want a guy, you know, that you could put wide a bunch of slashes next to him, you know, to help your team. And a guy that you read his backstory, and you know, Mike Mayock talked about him down at the LSU Pro Day. He says Russell Gage is a guy that could probably going to end up playing in the NFL for 10 years. Okay, so that's why I went that way with a second receiver to close out my mock there. Now, I might hit one of these, maybe, if I'm lucky.
Yeah, right. Of course. It's throwing darts.
I
like it, though. I like it. No, it's all about, as you've said all along, it's talking about the players and it's talking about the thought process and the team. So, you know, that's the entertaining aspect of it. And, you know, that's the thing why, look, I can tell you, you know, what I think Arizona might do in the first round, but I can't tell you the fifth need of the Arizona Cardinals. You know, this is what Dave and I do, and we can tell you. We can take it through all 53 guys and the guys on the practice squad and, you know, where the Steelers have depth and don't, where we think, you know, they should go with these picks and why. And, you know, hopefully we're, you know, considered, you know, close to experts on this stuff. So I can't do it for all 32 teams, and God bless the guys who try to cover all 32 teams that way. But hopefully we can do a good job on the one team that we spend all our time talking about.
As we start to wrap this up, is there, you know, is there one, two, three guys that you look forward, you know, or maybe are excited about the Steelers potentially drafting 28 overall?
I'll stay with the two guys, the two inside guys we've been talking about from the beginning, Van Der Esch and Evans. And, you know, again, I will state a strong preference for the Steelers. If, you know, one or the two quarterbacks are on the board and they're going to call it 28 and can move back, I have a strong preference for that. I certainly think that's, you know, not maybe wildly unlikely, but certainly highly unlikely. One in 15 type chance, you know, less than, you know, maybe one in 20 type chance, a 5% chance of it happening. But if they could do that, I think it would be very beneficial for the depth of the team, because, you know, you can fill in some of these, you know, you can find that edge rusher in the first three rounds and also get your wide receiver or also get your running back. I mean, I just wish, you know, them not having that fourth round pick. I wouldn't be thinking this if the Steelers had their fourth round pick. But because they don't have their fourth round pick, that makes a difference to me. I just feel like the drafts, every draft's different, obviously. But I think when you're talking about the fifth round and later, you're talking about guys who are long shots or longer shots to make the team. Obviously, your first four picks, I think, should be generally your first four picks should make the team. And so the whole reason I'm driving this narrative and would like to see it happen, and it's going to be somewhat dependent, I really think, on who's on the board on the quarterback position. But the reason I'm driving that narrative is I would like one more pick because I want an inside guy. I want a safety. And then I want an outside guy, a wide receiver, and a running back. And I'd like to get at least two out of three of those positions, you know, before you get to the fifth round. And that's the only way they can do it.
Okay, you're betting my money. Who's the pick?
Stay with Van Der Esch, like I said Friday.
Okay, Van Der Esch is your choice. Now, one other thing I wanted to go over real quick. You know, every year Kevin Colbert says, you know, 90 guys that could be starters for us. Another, 67, you know, 150 are on our board. Do you really believe there's as many as 150 on their board, or would you venture that they have like 50 names that they're almost guaranteed their draft picks are going to come off of a list of let's say 50 names?
Well, this has been very interesting as we've watched, you know, kind of cameras go into draft rooms and see things. And you know, the early days of talking about this, we had teams with boards of 250, 300 guys. And then we see the Patriots have 125 guys on the board. And everybody's like, what the hell is that all about? You know, how's that possible? And that's exactly what you're referring to, is they know the guys they want. They understand that, you know, different guys are going to have different grades on them and go at different levels. But they're going to be able to find their pool out of that 125. And which, you know, when you're drafting how many guys, you know, 7 times 30, was it 256 or something like that? Is that what we come out to roughly each year around that 250 guys?
Right.
You know, the small answer is 52 tight probably for me, but 100 is probably not. You know, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't have a board. I'm not saying you shouldn't have 200 guys on your board, because you want to be in the room and talking about guys. Now, if you're 17 guys in the room, you know, if there's you have 200 guys on there and 30 of them nobody wants to talk about, okay, then you're down to 170. But you know, you should still have guys on there to talk about, and that's, you know, that's the whole that for these guys. I'm sure that's the fun process. It's a lot of hard work, and it's a lot of, you know, a lot of detailed work, but it's also the, you know, being in the room and advocating for your guys, probably the fun stuff as well.
How much role versus, you know, scouts versus, I guess what I'm getting at here is, how many draft picks every year do the Steelers make that both Kevin Colbert and Mike Tomlin have not each seen 3 games each of?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think any organization that does well.
That's the kind of question David Todd would ask at the pre-draft press conference, yeah, right?
And never get an answer to. the any organization that's doing this well is a collaborative effort. So if you know, pick whatever position coach you want. Jerry Olsavsky says, "Hey guys, you know, it's mid-February." He says, "Hey guys, look, I've done a lot of work on this guy. I know he hasn't been on our radar, and we didn't see him at the Senior Bowl, but we got to spend some time on this." That's how it works. You can't have nobody's bringing up somebody on. I really, honestly, I'd be shocked if anybody's bringing anybody up on April 1st. You know, let alone where we sit. Obviously, nobody's bringing anybody up today. But if you better have all the names out there, you know, every name out there by February 15th or March 1st, and you've done 85% of your work by April 1st, and you get to last week, and you're just stacking your board. You're just stacking your board. And who was the team a couple of years ago? Was it the Saints? Was it Sean Payton who took all the guys to Vegas for a weekend and said, you know, I don't want them doing, you know, these guys are working 18 hours a day, 6 days a week. They need to step back and breathe. And I do think there's some of that, as you've talked about, you know, overanalyzing guys, trying to find flaws that aren't there. Look, you got to trust your judgment to a certain degree. It doesn't mean if you haven't done the work, don't do the work. It means these guys have all done the work. Step back and take a breath. And if I were Kevin and Mike right now, I really probably don't want my guys. If they haven't watched the tape on a guy, I'd ask why. So don't go in and grind tape on a guy you've already watched 50 hours of tape on.
And I wonder, too, how much analytics really plays a role in it, you know, with the because, look, I mean, we're in the age now where there's some great stuff being produced out there by sites like Pro Football Focus and Football Outsiders, and, you know, just to go down the list. I mean, of the axis of Peace Spark meets production points, you know what I'm saying? Those kind of things. I mean, pretty soon look, it's never going to probably be the rotisserie, you know, that baseball is, right?
Right. It'll never be that. No.
The money ball, but there's enough data now, you know, through the combine and the workouts and this, that, and the other, that there's got to be some strong correlation, you know, very strong correlation data points and all like that. To end this out, you know, with our discussion on that, in other words, you can envision guys actually jumping up and down on the table in the war room, right? Banging the table.
Yeah, I can see a heated discussion with when, you know, two guys are on the board and they're next to each other and you've already had a lot of conversation about them. And two position coaches, you know, advocating, not screaming at each other, but advocating to Kevin and Mike that, you know, look, this, you know, we've talked about these guys. We got them right next to each other. We need this guy. Yeah, I see that stuff. Yeah.
I mean, we've even, you know, Keith Butler's even admitted as well, you know, a few years ago when Dante Hightower was in, he admitted I was banging the table for this guy, that kind of thing. So, yeah, I wonder how much, you know, and I'm rambling here, but yeah, I wonder how much more position coaches, you know, watch.
I think an organization that does it right, you don't want to be in that situation often. Look, I'm all for guys. Look, if it's the Major League Baseball draft and it's round 37, who gives a crap? I mean, you know, let guys yell at each other. This is the NFL draft. You only got 7 picks. You have dissected this thing, you know, 9 ways from Sunday. You don't know how things are going to fall, but you shouldn't have surprises about what guys in your room are going to say. You can have surprises about the Bills and the Patriots making a trade, but you shouldn't have surprises on, you know, where your board is and who's advocating for whom. That should not be a surprise. So while guys can advocate for their guy, you should know where things are.
And now we all know the story about Ben Roethlisberger in 2004 and how Dan supposedly guided them, to Ben Roethlisberger while on the clock when they were supposedly kind of set on Sean Andrews at the time there. How much guiding do you think Art Rooney does?
Very little. He's been in on the conversations, but he knows that's not his job. And, you know, I don't know how apocryphal the story is from Dan or not, but it's a good story. But, you know, look, if Art trusts his guys. Their track record's great. I don't know why he would feel, you know, a little bit different story at the time maybe with Ben and kind of where the Steelers were and maybe that position being so significant and, you know, Dan's view on that. But I really, you know, if it came down to Van Der Esch and Evans, I don't think Art Rooney's saying, I think we should go this way. I doubt that very much.
So you don't see Art Rooney maybe guiding Kevin Colbert to maybe a Mason Rudolph?
I do not.
I had to go that way. David, I think we should kind of end with, a guy that you and I, you know, in our era as younger fans, Benny Cunningham. Tight end, former first-round draft pick of the Steelers. Back in the age, boy, you want to talk about back when tight ends were
big, running over guys. Benny Cunningham. There was nothing better than at Three River Stadium. Benny out of Clemson. You know, the Steelers had been playing with some undersized tight ends, Randy Grossman in particular, up to that point in time. And Benny was a different cat. I mean, you know, they'd moved Larry Brown from tight end to tackle. I'm trying to even remember some of the other guys who were in there in that day with Randy Grossman. But Benny came in at, you know, 6'5", big afro, Clemson, a likable dude, and he ran over dudes. I mean, Eric Green was a little bit in that mold a little bit later along the way from Liberty. But Benny Cunningham, man, I loved watching Benny catch the football and have a little room to run because he was a big dude.
And he could do it all, too. I mean, he literally could do it all. And, you know, he didn't have, you know, in today's day and age, his career catches, you know, would be wow. I mean, they didn't use him at all, but I mean,
awesome. Right.
Boy, you'll go back to that trick play, that flea flicker, right, against Cleveland many moons ago that ended in a touchdown. And yeah, just to go back and remember and watch some of the old highlight films of him, just, like you said, just running people slap over out in the open field. And unfortunately,
good with the stiff arm, too. Benny was good with the stiff arm.
Yeah, unfortunately, cancer. Evidently, he had been dealing with cancer since January and passed away reportedly yesterday. I think the article said it's 63 there. So, yeah, definitely tip of the hat
R.I.P. for Benny.
Yeah, to Benny there. Okay, David. Well, you and I are planning to get together Friday morning, first thing hold our regular show and obviously talk about the Steelers' first round draft pick and talk about who they might take in day two. You and I are planning to get together again also on Saturday morning as well to discuss the day two draft picks, and then I think Alex Kozora and I will get together on Thursday uh, or on,
on Sunday.
Sunday morning as well. The Steelers Depot annual mock draft contest will be up on the site, I hope, later today. So I encourage all of you to stop by and enter that. We've held that for three or four seasons as well, too. David, if I have time, maybe I'll put up the contest that you and I have as well, as, you know, name 40 names.
Yeah, that is the thing, is try, you know, in as few names as possible, how many names does it take you to name all players drafted in the first round? And so you can put 55 down, but that probably ain't going to win. But if you can do it in 40, God bless you. That's it's a good challenge for everybody who's a draft nick to see if they can do it. And rank them and see, maybe you just put 60 names down, but you rank them, and wherever the last guy in the first round goes is your total, and see how you did. That's a fun one.
All right. If you want to enter that before I get the forum up, go send it.
That's a better way to do it. Put 60 names down, and wherever, you know, pick number 32 in the first round falls, assuming you make it in 60, that's your number.
Okay, so send 60 in order from where you think they're going to be drafted.
Yeah, you don't get any points for getting them in order or right, but it's coming from the back end up, wherever the 31st second pick of the first round on your list falls is your number.
All right, send that to theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. In the meantime, follow me on Twitter @SteelersDepot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter @DavidMTodd. Follow the show @TerriblePodcast. Email the show theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. David, we got to a lot today. There's some good talk today. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, good fun as always. And enjoy the next couple days getting up for the draft. I'll be down in Austin, Texas. If you're down in Austin, Texas, let me know. If you're in Dallas for the draft, let us know. It'll be good fun to know if any Steeler fans are down there. And as always, thanks for listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.